This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Boosting vaccination rates is key to fighting the spread of COVID-19. And while many vaccines may have been hard to come by earlier this year, now getting people vaccinated is less a question of access and more about trust. This is certainly true in rural areas, which tend to have lower rates of vaccination. Now, farmers are being called on to step up as trusted community voices to have conversations one-on-one with neighbors, friends, and family about getting that shot. Christine Herman is a reporter for Illinois Public Media and Side Effects Public Media. She's been reporting on efforts to get people vaccinated in rural areas. Christine, welcome back to the 21st.
It's great to be here, Brian. Thanks.
I'd also like to welcome Tom Arnold. He's been farming full-time for 33 years and grew up on a farm. He lives in Joe Davies County, where he raises beef, pork, chicken, and turkeys for the holidays. Tom, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'd also like to welcome Carrie Cochran-McLean. She's Chief Policy Officer for the National Rural Health Association. Her organization has created an online toolkit for farmers to have conversations about the vaccine in their community. Carrie, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Listeners, we would love to hear from you, especially if you live in a rural area. Where are vaccination rates in your area? What are you hearing from people around you? Give us a call. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. So, Christine, I'm going to begin with you. Can you talk about I mentioned that vaccination rates in rural areas sort of lag those in other areas, but let's put some numbers on that. How do vaccination rates compare to the, I guess, non-rural areas in Illinois?
Yeah, absolutely. So statewide in Illinois, about 51% of all residents are currently fully vaccinated. If you look at the maps that are on the website of the Illinois Department of Public Health, they've got it shaded from light blue to darker blue. You can see some of the highest vaccination rates are in the Chicagoland area. Some counties up in that area are up to about 60% or even slightly higher. There are also several counties across the state that are tracking with the state average of about 50%. Those tend to be some of the more urban or micro-urban areas like Sangamon County, Champaign, McLean, and Monroe County in the East St. Louis area. And then if you look at some of the other rural parts of the state, it's kind of across the map, but, you know, tend to be below average. So the lowest vaccination rate is in Alexander County at the very, you know, southernmost tip of the state. The vaccination rate there currently is about 15%. There's a great piece from Kaiser Health News reporter Kara Anthony, who's been on the show before, about Cairo, which is there in Alexander County, that explores what's going on there. And the second lowest county in Illinois with about 22% fully vaccinated is Henderson County. It's along the western border of the state, just west of Galesburg.
So Carrie, does that picture fit with what your organization has seen nationally?
Yeah, we are really seeing, and obviously it varies across the country, but we are seeing pretty consistently lower rates of vaccination in our rural communities. And I think to a point you mentioned in the intro, initially some of that was around access and distribution, and I do think some of that still is an aspect of this, but a lot of it now really is transitioning into conversations about why you need to get vaccinated, why it's important, understanding how the vaccine kind of came to be, and those one-on-one conversations that you mentioned.
Tom, I want to bring you into the conversation now. I wonder, when you first heard that a vaccine was coming online, what was your reaction? Were you eager to get it, more on the skeptical side of things? How did you feel about that?
No, I certainly wanted to be vaccinated. What I found was that it was hard to get that initial appointment. I'm 68 years old, so I was in the group that was the earliest to be able to sign up for it. But it was hard to know how to sign up. It just seemed like there wasn't that information. Then all of a sudden it was there and it was easy to be called up.
And I understand that you, as I mentioned in the intro, you work with livestock, beef, poultry, things like that. Do you use vaccines in your farm work?
Yes, we vaccinate the breeding stock, primarily the females. And the whole idea there is that we will vaccinate for most common diseases that may crop up, and then they will pass immunity on to their young through their milk as they nurse early on. And then those young, in most instances, we don't vaccinate at all because they are immune to most of the common diseases that we would vaccinate for.
So I guess, you know, we talk a lot about this concept of herd immunity. I guess it's pretty literal when you're thinking of livestock. It seems like there would be a deep understanding of that in rural areas.
Most certainly. And this was kind of driven into me by a veterinarian I had early on and someone I greatly respected. And we had good luck with it. Now, there would be times when maybe we would see a disease arise, and then we would go back and do some blood work and testing with the animals and find that there was a disease out there that we were not vaccinating for, and some others maybe we really didn't need to vaccinate for because there just wasn't any pressure. So by tweaking the vaccines we would use, we were able to stay on top of any sort of diseases that would come up in the market animals.
So returning now, Tom, to humans and vaccines, what are you hearing from other people in your community about the COVID-19 vaccine?
Well, certainly it's very mixed, and I could probably talk about everything that anyone else has brought up in the past. Our county, Jadavis County, is roughly 50% vaccinated. We are definitely a rural county, although it's quite a second home contingent from vacation homes of Chicago people and people from elsewhere. So we have a lot of those people who I would say we're probably, I'm not going to say they're more educated, but be more apt to get vaccinated. Rural people, it seems like the opinions are all over the board from I don't think I need it to I've had it, so I don't need to be vaccinated, to it's a political ploy, on and on, all sorts of excuses that you hear. I usually don't try to convince anyone one way or the other, but do say that I feel it's reducing risk to be vaccinated.
All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking specifically about the COVID-19 vaccine in rural areas and trying to boost vaccination rates. As we've been hearing, some of the rural parts of Illinois are among the lowest rates of vaccination. Statewide, it's a little over 50% of people are vaccinated, but there are certain counties where one of them, it was as low as 15%, another 22%. We're speaking about that with Tom Arnold, who's a farmer from Elizabeth in the northwest corner of Illinois. Also, Christine Herman, a reporter with Illinois Public Media and Side Effects Public Media, and Carrie Cochran McLean, Chief Policy Officer at the National Rural Health Association. If you want to join our conversation, we'd love to hear from you about what you're hearing in your area, what you're seeing out there. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Carrie, I mentioned earlier, I said access is maybe no longer as much of an issue. It's more about reluctance nowadays. Let's take those in turn, though, because you said that access is still an issue. So what are some of the challenges to accessing vaccines that are still out there?
Sure. I think when we're talking about access, it's probably a different definition than we were talking about early on, where we actually didn't have the vaccine in our communities. You know, I think as individuals are contemplating getting vaccinated, you know, the goal right now for public health is really to think about how we bring the vaccine to people rather than maybe getting, people to the vaccine. And that hopefully will pick up some of the folks who aren't vaccine aren't adverse to getting vaccinated, just haven't been able to get around to it for a number of reasons. And, you know, those reasons can range from an access point and actually physically having it, you know, to needing to take time off work, to needing to take time off work both to get vaccinated and for potential kind of second day side effects. You know, so there's a range of kind of reasons why people haven't gotten it, in addition to just kind of the what we hear about a lot, the opposition. And so the kind of outreach or the kind of efforts we're talking about are really making sure that the vaccine's available in a primary care setting. So if you go into a physician or a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant setting, and you're having a conversation with your doctor, and we really do encourage these to be conversations and make that decision to get vaccinated, that you're able to get vaccinated there on the spot, and that there isn't a, you know, a process that you have to go through to get to a different location, take more time off of work, X, Y, Z. And so part of that is primary care. And then part of that is looking at, you know, mobile units or pop-up events or drop-in locations where people might be already aggregating or might already be stopping by and can get the vaccine in that place.
And do you, I don't mean to put you on the spot with this, but do you have a sense of the numbers? I mean, the media does tend, the things we tend to focus on here are the people who are sort of the hardcore, never going to get vaccinated, resistors. I mean, do you have a sense of how big the people who are just maybe ambivalent or just have been busy, it doesn't seem like that big a deal to them. You know, they don't know anyone who's gotten really sick from it. Do you have a sense of how big that population is?
You know, that is a great question. And I think it really varies. And it's become so politicized that, you know, I think a lot of folks are hesitant even to go into that space and have a conversation with their friends and neighbors because, you know, some of it has, it felt very, very extreme. You know, I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. I don't know if any of the other guests have looked at that, because I do think those numbers have evolved as the conversation has continued and as the Delta variant has become more of a factor. You know, I think people who may have been hesitant in the first place are, you know, you read more and more about people being more willing to get vaccinated or to have a requirement either from a fellow family member or a workplace or something else, you know, kind of some of that mandate conversation coming into play. So, you know, I think the unfortunate part of this is any data we have, it feels like it's evolving so quickly that I don't know if I could give a good snapshot of what it looks like today.
Sure. Christine, I wonder if you wanted to chime in on that.
Yeah, Brian. There was a poll that was done by the AP Associated Press together with the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. And it just published in late July. And they were asking people who weren't vaccinated if they feel they would get the shot eventually. And one of the findings was that, about 35% they of people who are currently unvaccinated, well, at least at the time of this poll in July, say they probably will not. 45% say they definitely will not. So it's a little bit discouraging from that sense. But like Carrie pointed out, you know, these things rapidly evolve. You know, I don't know if more coverage of the Delta variant that's more contagious, if that, you know, maybe it might nudge people, or as outbreaks continue, cases rise, hospitals fill up. You know, we don't know how public opinions will change at that point once people start feeling the effects.
Tom, what about this question of access for you? Did you have trouble accessing the vaccine when you did try to get it early on?
Early on, it was just hard to get an appointment. The newspapers and any sort of promotion would say that the vaccine's available, call the county health department, set up an appointment, that you'd call the number and there'd be no answer. There'd be no information. You just didn't know what was going on. Other people said, well, you have to keep trying, you have to keep trying, keep calling. My wife spent 3 or 4 hours one day going online, finally booked herself into a opportunity in Quincy, Illinois, which was quite a ways away from us, for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. She drove down there to get that. I did not have the luxury of taking that much time off, so I kept trying in the local county. about 2 weeks later, and this is all in March, February and March, I started to realize that they were vaccinating in the county on Thursdays. And I had called Friday morning about 10 o'clock. I got a live person right away on the phone, says, "Oh, you're the first person that called. We'll put you right on the list." And bingo, I was vaccinated the next week. So it was just like all of a sudden a switch was thrown and it was no problem. Before that, it just seems like when they filled up, they kind of shut the door and didn't inform people on what the procedure was to be prepared for the next opportunity. So yeah, that was very frustrating. But once it happened, it was very smooth. The actual vaccination procedure was very organized. For my first shot, I got to the facility and was out within a half an hour. And that included a 15-minute wait period to make sure I had no adverse reactions. The second time, there were more people for the second shot. It took more like an hour to by the time I walked in until I could walk out.
Yeah. I remember those days of people who were eligible at the time having the multiple laptops open like they were, you know, trying to get those World Series tickets, basically. All right, we need to take a break here. We're going to continue our conversation about COVID-19 vaccination in rural parts of Illinois. We're speaking with Tom Arnold, a farmer from northwestern Illinois, Carrie Cochran-McLean, who's with the National Rural Health Association, and Christine Herman, health reporter here at Illinois Public Media. We want to hear from you, listeners. 800-222-9455 is the number. I wonder, maybe you've heard of a strategy or some effort in your community that actually turned things around a little bit, actually convinced some people who were either just not prioritizing the vaccine. Maybe they were on the fence about it, and it turned it around. We'd love to hear those stories. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. This is the 21st. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about COVID vaccines, particularly in rural areas of Illinois. Listeners, we would love to hear from you. If you have, maybe you've convinced someone in your family, in your circle, at your church somewhere to get that COVID-19 vaccine. Maybe it was a one-on-one conversation. We'd love to hear your story of how that went. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. We're speaking about this with Carrie Cochran-McLean, who's with the National Rural Health Association, Tom Arnold, a farmer in Elizabeth, Illinois, near Galena, raises beef, pork, chicken, and Christine Herman, who's a health reporter with Illinois Public Media and Side Effects Public Media. And there's my dog in the background saying hello on the broadcast today. So, Christine, let me go to you. Let's talk now about cases in Illinois. Where are we seeing case rates rising the fastest?
Yeah, absolutely. So when the CDC first made the announcement back in late July recommending mask wearing indoors, regardless of vaccination status, they pointed to rising case rates. So that's rates of new COVID-19 cases that take into account the population. And at the time, most of southern Illinois and much of central Illinois on the map that's on the CDC, it's a COVID tracker map, were red. Now, pretty much the entire state is red, so cases are rising everywhere. Also, hospitalization rates are rising pretty much across the board. And along with that, ICU capacity, so intensive care unit beds, is decreasing. And I spoke with an epidemiologist about this, and she, Jalene Girardin, is at Northwestern University. She's been involved in advising state officials throughout the pandemic. She said of greatest concern is Southern Illinois' Region 5. It's a 20-county region where they've seen ICU availability in that part of the state drop from about 14% to now under 10%. And here's how she explained it.
They're pretty much at their fall wave peak in terms of hospital admissions, and no one else has reached like fall 2020 levels. So that is quite striking. So even in our most vaccinated area, Chicago, we are still seeing that, you know, pretty steep increase in hospital admissions.
Wow, Christine, so a big increase in cases. I think the CDC calls that what, substantial or high transmission, but we're also seeing hospitalizations going up too, like you said.
Right, yeah, and that's the concern. I mean, I also spoke with the state acting state epidemiologist, Sarah Patrick, recently, and she said, you know, many hospital systems have the ability to expand, and the state is involved in partnerships to help increase capacity as needed, but it's a point that, you know, it feels like deja vu, right? All this concern about, like, will healthcare capacity be met, and will there be a bed for people who need it? Will people have to transport to other places to find an available bed? All of that all over again is the concern, and that's what a lot of public health officials would really like to avoid. And I think all of us would like to avoid, right?
Yeah, flattening the curve, as we used to say a year ago, a year and a half ago.
Right.
Carrie, so let's talk about then. This obviously points up the need to why vaccination is important. Your organization has partnered with the National Farmers Union to promote vaccines in rural areas. Can you talk about why choose to work with farmers on this effort?
Sure. So one of the strategies that public health officials talk a lot about in terms of the vaccine effort is to engage trusted sources in communities. So these are folks who are looked up to, respected, well-known figureheads or individuals in their communities, in their areas. And when we, started thinking about rural areas, you know, our farmers and ranchers came, top to mind. I think the combination of, as you and Tom talked about earlier in the program, the understanding of the science and really getting how vaccines work both in individuals and in animals, that combined with just the role they play in their communities, brought them first to mind when we talked about individuals and associations that would be good to work with in this effort.
All right, we have a caller on the line at 800-222-9455. Jacob is on the line from Bloomington. Jacob, thank you for calling in.
Hi, thanks for having me. This is a really great program. I think it's a really valuable conversation. And we were just talking about like a trusted source and using language that people already value. And it's something that I think is kind of underutilized, and it's really kind of frustrating because, you know, for a lot of these people, you can't ignore the political part of why a lot of people are hesitant. There's a lot of reasons to be hesitant. I get that. But like, we have to acknowledge that part of it is political. And to me, like, we're missing a huge opportunity in saying things like, look, some of their trusted sources are Donald Trump. And like, guys, Operation Warp Speed was a Trump administration program. This was him. Donald Trump was one of the first people on the planet to get the vaccine, probably. So like, how are we not utilizing this as an angle to talk to people in the ways that they already value? There's a lot of things that we kind of harp on, and it's just kind of screaming into the void because they don't care about those other issues. And I think we're just missing a big opportunity there.
All right. That's a great point, Jacob. Thank you for calling in. Carrie, can you talk about that? What do you think? This, as Jacob said, meeting people where they are. How is your approach trying to do that?
Sure. I think it's, unfortunately, there is a lot of misinformation out there on COVID and on vaccinations. And pre-COVID, there was a pretty good chunk of the American population that were anti-vaxxers. So that's not a new term known to public health officials, unfortunately. And it has, as we've talked about, become very, very political, unfortunately. I think that's probably one of the hardest parts of this effort. And so, I think one of the things that we have seen is that when we're asking farmers and ranchers and others to engage in these conversations, it really is a conversation. It's very natural and good that people have questions, and having that conversation really does help to build the trust And really making sure that people have facts and that they have the right information so that they can make decisions. And that's part of what we're trying to do as an association, is get the right information, consumable information, into the hands of our trusted sources. And really, especially in our rural communities, I'm a Montana native, and I get the importance of that independent spirit and that ability to make a choice. And so really making sure that people do feel like they have a choice in it, but when they're making a choice, they're making an informed choice. And, you know, I can't speak to kind of where people are coming from when they're talking about not wearing masks or not wearing vaccine or not using vaccines, because it just really doesn't even resonate with me. But we have seen a number of political figures kind of change their tune as the pandemic has continued to evolve, and especially with this Delta variant, as we start to see kind of the severity, both in terms of how contagious it is and how impactful it can be on people's health. You know, we're hoping that more and more individuals will continue to kind of change that tune and give some of that flexibility in conversations to people.
Tom, I wonder if you want to speak to any of that. Have you engaged in any of these conversations or overheard them? Maybe at the, you know, downtown when you're in town, as people are talking about the vaccine and what's going on out there?
Sure. Several things come to mind. My wife is a great foil for any of my opinions, so I can always rely on her to come up with an opposing opinion. But I also have a cousin who was a farmer. He raises cattle, had been dairy for quite some time. He was not vaccinated, which I was a little surprised. He's my age. He said, well, these vaccines aren't proven, aren't very proven. There's no track record. So that was a concern. And I've heard that from other people too. The vaccines we're using in livestock, most of them have been around for a while. There's not something brand new we're trying to use. Oftentimes, though, when a disease does come up in livestock, everyone's waiting for the next vaccine to come out, whether it's proven or not. So there's some concern there. There's also concern, and this comes from my wife, on a couple of vaccines that have seemed to have had side effects in certain groups of people. I think that if the government, the vaccine manufacturer, someone could come up with statistics on that. Yes, we have 5% who are reacting poorly to these vaccines. Then you may want to consider a different vaccine. But to consider and know that the risk is, no matter which vaccine you use, is probably going to be less to you getting the vaccine. I think that people, that's part of making that decision, having more information as to this. My wife keeps claiming that a lot of these, some of this information that is alternative just gets taken down from the internet. Well, I don't follow those things that well, so I don't know if that's true or not. She says you can find it, but it's not as easy as it used to be. So those are the few things that I've been hearing. I think that, once again, most people, if they had more information, both pro and con, that they could better make an informed decision.
Yeah. Christine, I've heard this idea out there. People have said they don't want to be part of an experiment, right? The idea that taking this vaccine makes you part of an experiment. But the counter that I've heard is, well, if you really think about it, if you're not taking the vaccine, you are still part of the experiment. It's just that you're in the placebo group or the control group. I don't know if you can weigh in on any of that and people wanting more information where they can go to sort of find answers to those questions that they might have.
Yeah, I mean, right. Well, one, the mRNA vaccines have been in development for years. And when the coronavirus genome was sequenced, the scientists were able to swap in, you know, that genetic sequence and develop the vaccine fairly quickly. So a lot of scientists have said, you know, there were no corners cut in terms of safety for the vaccine development, right? And that clinical trials were done. The reason why they were able to get the vaccine out so quick is because manufacturing was started concurrently with the trials, so that when the trials completed, needed. They were ready to roll out immediately.
As our caller mentioned, that was President Trump's Operation Warp Speed.
People have given him credit for it. And I think Carrie can speak more to this, but it's sort of the idea that if you have questions, you know, raise them with a medical professional who you trust, or with someone like Tom, a farmer down the street who you trust and who understands some of the science a bit more, and raise those questions and have those conversations, and hopefully that can give people more peace of mind as they go about navigating their decision making on that.
And Carrie, we have just a couple of minutes left in our conversation here. Can you talk about, is there a new urgency now coming up? I mean, we're seeing cases rise everywhere. There's a lot of attention on the Delta variant and it being more transmissible. But obviously, there's just been a major turn in the human behavior here. People are not masking, even though the CDC still recommends it, certainly for unvaccinated people, but also for vaccinated people in areas of high transmission. What's next? Where are your concerns today?
Sure. Well, I think, we are seeing the Delta variant. It is predominant across the country. But I think if we look at kind of the South and the Sun Belt, we get a sense of kind of what the fall might look like. We really do see numbers peaking in those parts of the country. And unfortunately, we're seeing kind of an alignment of, these high infection rates really corresponding with our lowest vaccine rates, which is not surprising. I was reading something that in Mississippi, over 90% of the hospitalizations in the state are among the unvaccinated. So, I think the challenge is that because we have, even with vaccinated, these breakthrough infections that may or may not be severe. It sounds like those who are vaccinated definitely have an easier time if they do get the Delta variant or COVID. We really have to start thinking about, and as Christine was saying earlier, we're ramping back up again, and that our healthcare providers and our hospitals are really having to kind of continue and increase their capacity and preparation. And to some extent, I think we knew this was going to happen in the fall, but the timing of that with the Delta variant has just made it really challenging.
Yeah,
I think there's just an exhaustion point too.
Yeah.
Right.
It's come a lot earlier than we expected. We're going to have to end our conversation there. I do want to mention, we'll tweet out a link. The National Rural Health Association has created a toolkit for farmers to help them promote vaccination efforts in rural areas. We will tweet out that link. That is all the time we have. I want to thank our guests for this important conversation today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.